Hey, and welcome back to B2B, the sassiest podcast for B2B, and your go-to place for fun and actionable conversations with industry leaders. I'm your growth marketing host, Lee Moskowitz. So excited for today's episode because I have Joseph Jewell, a recruiter that codes and a master of satire. Armed with an IT degree, an MBA, a master's in software engineering, and a certified AWS cloud practitioner, Joseph is a true techie with a passion for connecting the right people, the right opportunities. He's also the host of Architects of Innovation and All Things Nerdy. You might have seen Joseph's satirical interview tip posts that always get you in the second half on LinkedIn. I am such a big fan of those, and I'm so excited. Get ready for a conversation with the job market, blending humor with expertise and tips for the job search on B2B.
Do you have to make a request? If you could just introduce me to everything I do from now on, like, that would be great.
Done.
Done. Can I just take that recording and anytime I have to go, like,
take
have
it.
Be introduced
I'll travel
anywhere.
With you too. Take it, yeah.
I was just sitting there like, that was the best introduction of me I've ever heard. So thank you for that.
Well, thank you. Well, I like to say it's all downhill from here because that's the only thing I really write. I do have my questions, obviously. I do work. Before we even get started, so we are recording this on March 6th, and LinkedIn was just down for like an hour or two. Are you okay, Joseph? Did you survive okay?
Barely. I went into our like group Teams chat at work and I was like, is LinkedIn Recruiter and regular LinkedIn down for everyone? Like, I don't know what to do with my hands right now. So I was not okay for a little while there, but it is back up, thankfully. So the world is right again. I almost had to go down the street and just start applying to jobs in person and just got to get another day job because I thought recruiting was over for a minute there.
Yeah, I almost went outside and had a real conversation with a real person, but luckily LinkedIn's back. This also comes, like, yesterday Meta was down, so, like, yep. Something is going on. We're about to apocalypse or something.
Yep, all the hackers are attacking all the social medias. They're going, it's like, oh, I had to actually text someone yesterday instead of Facebook message. What is this world?
Yeah, so your LinkedIn bio says that your goal is to bridge the gap between technical recruiter and technical professional. So first question is going to be, why is that your goal? And second is, what does that look like? What does bridging the gap actually look like?
When I started out in recruiting, I had a little bit more of a technical background than most people that started recruiting. I had a bachelor's in IT, right? So it was funny. I went through the Apex technology training and I was pointing out the flaws in their training. I was like, oh, that's not right. Like, that's not correct. You're actually teaching people the wrong thing to kind of help revamp their training when I went through that. Just a few little, like, it was like quiz answers, so it's like nothing like big, but that's kind of how it all started. I was like, getting on the phone, like, as a new recruiter and talking to a .NET developer or talking to pretty much anyone in tech, you're completely lost. Like, you go through your training that your job provides, but it's not really in depth. It doesn't really give you the insight that you need, and they're just so tech is so big and so wide, like, you don't really know where to focus, that kind of thing. Again, like, then you talk to Java developer and maybe you think that's the same thing as a JavaScript developer. You said earlier, like, I want to match the right people to the right opportunity. And when you're first getting into tech recruiting, like, it's so hard to do that because you don't know what you don't know. And there's so much tech out there that it's just impossible. And you're actually burning bridges when you talk to this Java developer and you try to submit them to a JavaScript developer. Well, they're never going to talk to you again because they think you're an idiot. And it's not really your fault, right? You're new and you don't understand those things. So one of the things that I did was actually when I was at Beko, I revamped their entire like technical training. So went through and just added like really big chunks to it, those kinds of things. Can't really talk about exactly what I did, but it made their technical training like a lot more in depth than what it was already. Just because, like, it's what people need. Like, they needed to know the difference between automation QA and manual QA and those kinds of things that you don't really think about when you first get into recruiting. And then another thing to do, and actually I'm posting my first episode, or it's called episode, but it's a little clip will be, and you may have seen it from my TikToks, but it's essentially like a minute of tech where I'm kind of playing around with a new name for it, that kind of thing, to make it more catchy. But essentially, I explain technical terms in about a minute, right? So it makes it more bite-sized. So you're not, you know, your eyes aren't glazing over, those kinds of things. I try to use an analogy from the real world, right? I have to use as Java is to JavaScript as car is to carpet, right? Got the same letters in there, but don't really, you know, correlate. So, but that's a little bit, I feel like I talk forever on that, but that's a little bit about why I got into it and kind of what I'm doing to help bridge that gap. So,
no, that is awesome. And so, like, I'm a growth marketer. I've also been super marketing ops and technical roles. Technical roles for me is a walk in a park for you when I say technical. But, like, a lot of times when you talk to a recruiter or something, it's like, and again, I'm nowhere near as technical, but I'll like say like, oh, like what CRM is the company on? And like, they won't even know that or something like that.
It's like, so, what's a CRM?
Yeah. So I imagine it's even harder with all these technical things because you're like, I don't know if they need HTML or Python or Java. But when somebody like you who spoke this language knows this stuff, that has to make such a big difference. So how does that make a difference in the process?
So it definitely makes a difference when I'm talking to candidates on the candidate side, right? Because if they don't know automatically, just from looking my LinkedIn up, that kind of thing, before we get on the call, like quickly, I start asking questions that are different than the typical questions. Like I don't, write these, questions from Google down and talk through that. I'll actually have deeper conversations. I'll be like, well, what did you contribute to that? Or how did you implement that? And then I'll be like, well, I've recently been reading about Next.js and how it, it's built on top of React and it's for server-side rendering. Like, what do you think about that? So like, I will kind of go in a little deeper with the conversation than just kind of like checking boxes, like, oh, you have React. Oh, you have this, like that kind of thing. And I feel like it builds lasting relationship, because one, they're going to remember that, well, that was a random recruiter that actually kind of understood what I was talking about, and I really enjoy learning about the projects that people are working on, so I like to dig in a little deeper and like, all right, what did you do, or why did you do that, or how does that work? So it just builds lasting relationships that way. And then on the client side too, like, I can ask them about their project and what this developer, what this technical person is going to be getting into, and actually understand more of the day to day. And I can explain it better to the candidates and that, and understand like what the client actually needs. So it just helps kind of on both sides of it for sure.
Yeah. Like literally, like, again, I, as someone who, 6 months job searching, have been on their block before that too. It's like, when you talk to somebody who knows their stuff that early on in the process, it makes such a game, because then one, if it's worth your time as a candidate, but two, it also preps you for the interview, so you know what to say, and everybody kind of wins that way.
Yep, 100%. And it does, it sets you apart. Like we were talking on Architects of Innovation yesterday about like when you go say to a McDonald's and someone gives you like the best customer service, you just don't expect it, right? One, so you're going to remember that person like, wow, like that was a really good experience. It's kind of almost like that in a way where it's, just take pride in what I do. And I like to learn as much as I can about pretty much as much technology as I can, that kind of thing. I mean, it sets you apart and just kind of makes the process a lot more smooth on both sides of the process. So.
Yeah. So, I mean, you are in these type of techie roles. You have this gigantic educational background in tech. You've had these certifications. What made you jump to staffing? Was it a happy accident? Was it something that you pursued? Like, what was that change for you?
Yeah, it was an accident, right? Like, I guess you never hear of someone like, yeah, when I grow up, I want to be a recruiter. Like, so it was, I was working, I got a bachelor's in IT. I was kind of still in school for MBA, just kind of doing it for fun to continue learning. I was working at Verizon Wireless as like sales and tech support, kind of fixing devices, selling devices, that kind of thing. And then I had a friend that I worked with go into staffing to Apex Systems. And then about a year later, they hit me up. They're like, hey, you really need to come do this. You'd be great at it. Like, you're going to love it. And I was like, what even is that? So you know, talked to him about his day to day. He was actually like on the team with a couple of our coworkers from there. So I talked to them as well. And then I was like, sure, I'll interview. And that's kind of how someone drug me into staffing, technical staffing specifically. And just, I haven't looked back. And that was back in 2017. So that was a while ago.
Mm-hmm. It's crazy when I like, cause to me, like 2017 wasn't a while ago, but I'm like, oh my God, it was. Like, that's how I think about it. Like, what do you mean it was a while ago?
That's like last year, right? It's like, actually. Right?
All right. So, I mean, we have to get into just your satirical post, because like your humor and my humor is the same. Your posts are always a hit. They like literally always get you in the second half, which I love, because they start off like either like, why are you suggesting that? Or this is normal. So... How did you get started with this? Like, and then when did it take off?
Yeah. So how I got started, I saw all the, you know, the gurus on LinkedIn and all the people posting, you know, advice. And it was like, all the advice is different and no one knows, you know, what to actually follow and what to actually do and implement and that kind of stuff. And I was like, you know what? I want to help. I want to put my thoughts out there, but I also want to be different. I want to make it me. I don't want to just be another person, another wheel in the cog, posting advice, posting tips, that kind of stuff. So it's like, I want to give something back, but it has to be me. And that's when I came up with, you know what? I'm going to post tips, but I'm going to put a spin on them. I'm going to make it, you know, more fun. I'm going to make it more memorable, that kind of thing. I'm just going to, and again, address topics that are just ridiculous in the job market and just, you know, use satire, use humor to kind of throw them out there, you know, bring them to light, that kind of stuff. And it's crazy because some of the tips people are like, you know what, that's almost how the job market is. I'm like, that's kind of the point of these. Like, it's so rough out there. Like, you were job searching for 6 months, right? Like mm-hmm. It's hard and it's a rough time. So a lot of, and I wanted to also kind of shed some, give some light back. Like, you're on LinkedIn, you're looking for jobs, reporting, you're seeing the same all over and over and over again. You come to one of my posts and hopefully it kind of brightens your day a little bit, right? Like, some people do take it seriously. I'll have comment of people who are like, oh, you completely missed this time. And it's like, well, I don't know. I thought it was funny. But again, it's a way to give back to the community, but also like make it more me and kind of more like, hey, this is a little bit of who I am, right? Like, I use dark humor to cope with a difficult situation, and here is my version of this. So
yeah, I got like the same everything you said, like exactly my humor. But like, I think what the bigger thing is like, it sucks to be a job seeker. Like, it does, like in this market more than ever. Like it's just so demotivating, and you feel like you're in this like island and you're trying to get off. But then, like, when you see somebody just poking fun at, like, the annoying parts of it, or, like, the sheer stupidity of some of the stuff, it makes you feel better, but it makes you feel like you're not alone. And I think people really resonate with that.
Yeah, and the comments about it are on the posts are like some of the best parts, right? Just the community coming together, still poking fun. Some people, like, take it and, like, go even darker. Some people take it and put a spin on it, and it's just fun to see the back and forth in the comments as well. And I try to reply to everyone in the comments and kind of just get that, you know, keep the engagement up and make them like, people know that, hey, I'm here, I'm a real person. Conversation does get hard at times. It really came back to the original question kind of asked. Like, started posting them around like the first or second week of October last year. At that time, I had maybe 4,500, 5,000 followers, that kind of thing. Just more like from organically adding people as I was recruiting over the years, that kind of stuff. But then now I kind of look back, I look today and I had almost, it was like 24,000 something. So getting close to 25,000. So from October to now, it's been pretty exponential growth. And like you said, it's just that people wanting, you know, to not feel like alone, like, hey, this is a community that we're building together and that we're coming together and we're making fun of some of the ridiculousness, like a 7-round interview process or getting ghosted or never getting feedback at all, or, you know, coming in second place and the feedback is, well, you were good, but you weren't great. Right. Like, which is almost, I would almost rather be ghosted than hear that, but it is what it is. Right.
Yeah. So I'd love to get into some actionable tips and just talking resumes. So, I don't want to generalize, but like, for my friends, from people I know in tech, these people are so amazing at what they do. They're very technical. They're so dedicated to their job. But then a lot of times when it comes to like writing their resume or like translating that, like that's, it's just so different from what their skill set is and what they do day to day. So like, what are just some of your tips for people in get like some basic tips for these techie people and resumes?
Yeah. And you hit it dead on. Like they're developers, they're project managers, they're QA people. They're not resume writers, right? So, I mean, I've gotten some of the worst resumes from people and I'm just like, oh my gosh, but it's fine. I will help you. Some just kind of basic general tips is one, like, I mean, honestly, don't overcomplicate it. Like, you don't have to have these fancy themes with, like, you know, big pictures and lots of colors and stuff like that. Like, a basic template with, you know, one column all the way down. Like, I know people, you know, talk about the ATS is like, honestly, when a two column resume gets uploaded into an ATS, like it does get garbled. Like all the information is still there, it just looks weird. So it's not very ATS friendly from that perspective. Like you're not going to get disqualified or the ATS isn't going to eat your resume or anything like that. But, you know, for me trying to pull it up in our system, like I'm going to have to go and ask you for an updated resume just because it just doesn't work well. But again, like less is more from the perspective that you don't have to make it look fancy. Put the experience, the dates, the titles, that kind of stuff in there, and don't worry about all the bells and whistles, that kind of thing. Because honestly, when you send them to, and we have a template that we use, and anyone, I would say, if you're looking to build a resume, Google, you know, resume template, use one of those that pulls up. Like we have a specific template that we use, and we pretty much edit everyone's resume to match that template when we get it in. So all that time you're spending kind of making resume look fancy, It's not really worth it. You're not really getting, you know, anything out of that, especially when it comes to when you're working with different recruiters for different companies, because they all look for different things. And the other big thing, especially for tech people, would be like if it's in your skills section, make sure that's reflected in your actual experience in the body of the resume. So if you put React at the top of your resume, we need to see how it was used, where it was used, like in your actual experience. And that's going to be huge. Those are a couple little tips.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's so big. Like, so like one, I think format too, and especially when we come to developers, it's like, they're so like, oh, well, we need to do everything to look really nice. And I see it with designers too. And I'm like, it looks beautiful, but like you focused on that. I say a lot of the times, especially with the technical audience, they end up kind of just saying what the responsibilities are, rather than their accomplishments. Tech, it's different from sales or marketing where there's quotas and KPIs. So like, how do they get a bit more specific?
And that's really like, because I mean, there's different tech for like different roles, right? So I could explain something from a developer standpoint, from a QA standpoint, those kinds of things, but it's all about breaking down like, beyond the buzzwords, right? So you can put React in there, but what did you do with it? Like, did you build components from scratch, or did you, you know, copy and paste components? Like those kind of, that's going to set you apart. Like build custom components for React websites or for a React library, those kinds of things. Like being able to drill down and actually kind of put the specific things that you did and that you were created and your specific contribution, like that's going to set you apart. Like just because your team created this cool application, what did you exactly like do during that, right? Like what part of the application were you responsible for? Like lay that out in your resume and lay out how you did it, right? Like were you part of the CI/CD? Did you actually push your code into production? Were you part of testing? Did you write your own unit test? Did you like those kinds of things? Like add all of that stuff in there, because that's going to set you apart from someone who, well, you know, this developer CI/CD was completely handled by a different team and they kind of know how the process works, but they didn't actually hands-on do any of it. So, but
yeah. And so this kind of goes back to what we're talking about, how we're like most tech recruiters, if not like nobody is like you with this amount of tech experience. So like a lot of times we're writing resumes as subject matter experts, and the recruiter isn't necessarily in there. And I know a big part of talent acquisition is kind of being able to figure out what we need on the skill level, the people level. But it's hard if you don't know there. So like, how do you, like, what is the right balance of not being too technical so that like most recruiters can kind of like get what they need while still being like, I'm not just saying general things.
Yeah. So it is a fine line, right? Because especially when you're applying to a bunch of different jobs, a lot of recruiters, they just don't know, and they're going to search those keywords, right? So I would say make sure you have the keywords, right? Like when you're applying to a job, you're looking at the job description, the recruiter is going to look at your resume and search for the keywords, control F, right? Like they're going to control F your resume and look for those specific keywords. So make sure you have those in there. And that's how you're going to get past the recruiter, right? But you still need to add that, like what you technically did, because that's how you're going to get in front of the, like once you're actually in front of the manager, that's how you're going to get an interview. You put the buzzwords in there, but also make sure you're breaking that down, because you have to get beyond just the recruiter. And I would just keep that in mind.
Yeah. So, you know, most people are job seekers. So like a lot of these tips focus on there, but I always like to acknowledge like how hard the role of a recruiter and talent acquisition actually is. So, like, my question really for you is, we're at a time, part of the reason the job market is so fucked is because there's so many great people looking for jobs. So those jobs are limited. So it's a unique time where there's so many good candidates out there and fewer jobs. So how do you, as a recruiter, deal with this such high volume of candidates to find the right person?
Yeah, and it's really by kind of knowing exactly what the client is looking for. Because yeah, there are a lot of candidates in the market, especially in the tech market, right? With the layoffs continuing through this year, we thought this year was going to be better, but the year started and the layoffs continued, so it hasn't gotten any better yet. But again, like a lot of clients, especially like me as an agency recruiter, like they come to us when they can't find someone internally, right? Like they may have an internal recruiting team that's working on it as well, or they may just outsource recruiting in general, but it's because they need us to find something that is harder to find in the marketplace than typical. So it's usually mid to senior level roles, specific skill sets, they need to be in a specific location. So like even though the roles that I'm working on, you know, there's a ton of people out there, it's really like fitting the right person to these roles, because they have to have the correct background, sometimes be in the right location, right? Have the right skill set, but have the right experience with the certain tech that we're looking for, that kind of stuff. So it's really like being able to talk to the person, get them on a video, get them on a call, and like talk through their background and understand like, hey, are you a good fit for this role? So it's still the same. The same process, right, as when it was before, when it was crazy, kind of flip, right, when there was tons of openings and not that many candidates. It's the same process, same kind of from beginning to end, but it's just more like now I have to tell a lot more people that, hey, you're not quite the best fit for this role, which sucks for me. It's like, but I'm gonna keep my eyes open. I hope I can find you something. I hope I can help you out, because me, I want to help everyone. When I see posts about people looking for the job market for 6 months, like it sucks, man. And I want to be able to put everybody to work. But again, like as an agency recruiter, like my job is to fill the roles that I'm assigned to fill the roles that our clients have. So I can't spend, you know, an hour, 2 hours looking at people's resume and going specifically to try to find that person a job, even though that would be great. And, you know, that would make me feel better, right? But I do have to meet certain numbers and stuff like that. So it's all about matching the right candidate to the right opportunity.
Well, it's time for our next segment, which is Spill the Tea with Lee. That's right. This is the Sassiest Podcast for B2B, and we are going to get juicy. All right, Joseph. Okay, so whenever there's amazing satire, there are people who don't get that it is satire. So you kind of talked about it before. But I am curious, like when I ask you this, what are some of the funniest or weirdest or rudest times where people like just like the joke went whoosh over their heads and they said something weird?
Yep. So one that sticks out to me is I posted something about like, you know, put your top five songs, and it tells a ton about your personality, right? And people were putting their top five songs, and I was satirically replying back of what I felt like that said about them, and it wasn't nice, right? I was being obnoxious. I was trolling the people that was putting there, and I had a person like message me directly, call me an asshole, and can't believe I said that about them, and that kind of thing, and then blocked me. I did feel really bad about it, right? I don't really want to actually upset people. That's not my goal. But they blocked me, so I couldn't really apologize. I'd be like, hey, I didn't mean to offend you. Like, this is meant and fun, like those kinds of things. But I have had several messages where I'm an asshole or I'm an idiot, you know, those kinds of things. And, but if I ever feel like I cross the line and actually upset someone, I do go individually to that person and apologize to them. I've done that several times where it's like, look, this is a joke. I am doing this as satire. Like, I don't mean to actually upset anyone. Because people get upset about some things that I'm just like, sorry, I didn't realize anyone could take it.
Well, people like to get upset. People like to get upset, but like, so like my take on it is if somebody reads your full post, your full comments, there is no reason they should think it's serious. If somebody reads the first sentence or two, maybe. But so, like, reading is fundamental, people. Read the full post before you comment. So, like, that's kind of how I feel about it. Secondly, if you don't get it satire, that's probably why you don't have a job. Because, like, it's a basic comprehension that it's satire. So that's my take on it. But, like, who is some of your, like, inspiration or favorite comedies or comedians or anything like that? Like, you must have some.
Honestly, I can't think of, like, you know, famous people that I, like, have kind of pull inspiration from. But, I mean, I like different TV. I don't watch a ton of TV, but I have seen, like, Game of Thrones and different stuff like that where there's comedy and other crazy stuff mixed in, that kind of stuff. But
well, the last season of Game of Thrones was a ironic. What is it? Dark comedy? I don't know. I'm trying to say it was shitty. That's all I'm saying.
100%. But we could do a whole separate podcast on that.
There's no joke here. It was a shitty season. That's it.
Yeah, there's no joke. The last season was the joke. But I really enjoy, like, the actual other people on LinkedIn as well. So there's several people that I interact with a lot and, like, kind of took inspiration from them. Not necessarily because they don't do exactly the same thing. We all do our own little spin on it. And I don't want to name a ton of names, then I feel like I forgot someone. But, like, it's Janayed is one of them, and his partner, Kevin Logan. And Lori Golden's always on my post, like, taking it to the next step, if you've probably noticed that. Richie Lampini, like, definitely one of the first people that I started paying attention to when he started posting selfies in onesies with his feet kicked up. I was like, oh, you can be funny on LinkedIn, right? And then Art and Rowan, like, are a couple other people that I've kind of talked to on LinkedIn. I'm like, oh, what are you doing? Like, why are you doing it like that? And they were like, well, we also see that there's an issue and join us. And I was like, you know, sure, I think this is fun. But yeah, just real world people, you know, just kind of doing stuff on LinkedIn a little differently.
Yeah. So we are spilling tea here. So I want to get your hot takes on interview assessments and in technical roles. It could be important. It could be a variety of things on what an assessment means. So I just want your hot takes here. Interview assessments. Let's spill some tea. What are your thoughts?
Oh my gosh. I hate take-home assessments with a passion, right? It's like, you want me to go tell this developer that also has other interviews, potentially another job, to go spend 3 hours doing this take-home assessment. And I mean, what are you going to do? Like, make sure someone else doesn't do it for them? Like, someone else could literally just be sitting at their desk and doing it for them. Or they could just, you know, ChatGPT the whole thing at this point, right? Is it really a true test of skill? And why do you have to have that much time into a take-home assessment when, like, and I get it. You got to try to see how they code, that kind of stuff. Do, like, a quick paired programming session. Like, it doesn't have to be a pass or fail thing. More of, like, you want to see how they code and how they interact, like, how they think through a process. Just do, like, a quick, easy challenge that, you know, just kind of gets you that initial thought process. You don't have to go and assign them a take-home assessment that takes 3 hours and waste everyone's time because you're not going to actually review it. And then you look at their resume and be like, yeah, I don't actually want to talk to this person. That's another big pet peeve of mine, is when you ask for the assessment before you ever talk to the person. Like, no, so they have to take this assessment or do this assignment before you even, like, lay eyes on the resume or even want to, like, see that you're interested in chatting. They could do all of this, put all of this into it up front, and then you deny them and it goes nowhere. It's just not good candidate process for sure. What about you? What are your thoughts?
I mean, I've hired, obviously, and I've been hired and been interviewing. So I have done assessments when I've done hiring. And when I see assessments, they were like answering very simple questions on like, hey, like for marketing, it's like, okay, like what would you recommend here? And like very loose, not asking for an entire strategy, like basically just knowing, okay, I'm hiring for a paid media role. I literally just want them to be like, hey, this is a very clear case for Facebook advertising, to say Facebook advertising, or like, this shows me that they understand advertising criteria. I don't need them to make a whole campaign. I don't need them to do anything free. I literally just kind of needed something to, like, you know, verify they're not just saying buzzwords. So I've done that for a few roles. Most roles I really didn't. It's because it's like I was hiring for stuff I understood, which meant I knew when someone really knew what they were talking about. And again, that's the advantage of I was very involved in my hiring processes. Like I did the hiring. There wasn't a recruiter. Like, yes. So, I mean, we had our HR and recruiting team like getting the resumes. So, yes, we had it. But like, I was so that's how I feel. Second is getting assessments. I did some here, like during my journey. Like I wouldn't do it again. They are not worth it. All they're doing is collecting ideas. They are dragging their feet. They're not going to be decision makers if they can't even decide on who to hire without asking you to do something. And in most cases in marketing, in most cases in or adjacent marketing, they're literally just asking for like a free plan that you would do once you're hired. Yeah. And like, that's how I feel. That was my rant.
I've definitely seen a lot of people posting like how they did full marketing campaigns as an assignment. And then companies kind of took it and used it. And they
withdraw from the process. Withdraw from the process. It's not worth it. And you're going to be even more mad or madder, whichever it matter, angry, well, whatever. You're going to be madder, I'll say, more mad after the fact than if you just didn't do it. So that's why, again, not all assessments are the same. So that's a big thing. And I see it on LinkedIn too. It's like some advice is specifically for more senior roles. Some advice are for more entry level roles. I think people forget that. But like, there's a big difference between like, hey, this is like a quick thing just to prove you know it versus do your job for free.
Right. And same with some of the coding challenges in the dev world, right? Like there's some that are for more senior level roles. There's some for more junior roles. I mean, as a junior developer, you pretty much have to take the assessment, right? Like you have to show them what you know, show them what you can do, those kinds of things. But I mean, honestly, as a senior developer, like, you have a lot more options, and you're like, if you don't want to do that 3-hour coding assessment, maybe that's not the right role for you. You have enough experience where you can kind of walk away and be like, nope, I'm going to go for a role that I don't have to do that with. And I mean, it happens all the time. Like I'll get a client that wants them to do a challenge and they're like, not for me. Sorry.
Yeah. And even if your intentions are good, like so many people, like they've been burned before, so they're not going to do it. Like they just know not. So if you do have to do an assessment, and again, there are the occasions, like do it kind of you're saying where it's more of that live two-way interaction, or it's just something like, we have to do this obviously, but it's more of like a skill check than like plan.
Yeah, more you're not doing free work and letting them take it. You're just kind of doing a quick thing that just kind of showcases you know what you're talking about.
All right, so one more thing I want to spill the tea on, and again, it's because most of us have been job seekers or are job seeking, and we're not on that other side. So spill the tea on what's one thing that you want people to know or wish more people understood about the behind the scenes of being a recruiter?
Yeah, I would say just like, especially as an agency recruiter, like we are at the mercy of hiring managers, like when it comes to the process, right? Like we would love that an interview process that isn't 7 rounds long, but, and we are pushing back, and if as long as you're good, in most cases, trying to get it shorter, that kind of stuff. We're trying to get hiring managers to give feedback, those kinds of things. But a lot of times it's just out of the recruiter's hands. Like we don't make the positions. We don't make the salary ranges. We don't make the job descriptions, although sometimes we do help make the job description based on what the manager has kind of told us they need. But a lot of the details and stuff like that, they're just completely out of our hands and we can't do anything to change it. Just know, like, the good ones are trying, like, we're pushing back on the manager saying this doesn't make sense, like, you shouldn't require X, Y, and Z because no one has all three of those things. You're going to have maybe two of those, or, you know, you shouldn't have an 8-round interview process because if you can't hire someone after 3 rounds of interview, like, there's something wrong with you, it's not the candidate, you know, those kinds of things. So we are, you know, pushing back and trying to make the process better. But again, like, I know a lot of the recruiters get flack for it, for a lot of the processes and stuff like that, posting, you know, salaries, those kinds of things. A lot of times posting the salary, the recruiter's not allowed to do it because it's a company policy, even though the recruiter's like, I really wish I could just post this. But again, it's something that's really out of their hands. They kind of have to just do their job.
Yeah. Let's not scapegoat recruiters, people. Like, yes, there's messed up stuff out there. There's messed up practices. It's frustrating. But, like, recruiters are people, and most of the times you're not frustrated with them. You're frustrated with their client.
Yeah, frustrated with the client or the company as a whole, that kind of thing. And I will say, like, ghosting does suck, right? But, I mean, we're all people, right? It happens. Like, you get bogged down. You're, you know, trying to fill the roles, you know, that kind of stuff. I'm trying to think if I've ever ghosted anyone. Definitely not purposely. But I can't say that I've never let someone fall through the cracks. But if someone, I may forget to reach back out to someone, but if they reach out to me again, I will never not respond to that. Like, if you're showing me you have the genuine interest and you're following up with me, I'm going to respond to that. When people don't respond, that's when, like, I see it as ghosting. And that's when I say, like, you are an asshole for that.
Like,
people have, like, time.
We've just overused the word ghosting and co-opted it. Like, ghosted doesn't mean, like, you applied and, like, didn't hear back. That's not what that means. Ghosting means, like, you actively talked to somebody and then they disappeared. And that's beyond rude.
Yeah.
But,
100%. Especially, like, and I can see, like, recruiters are talking to so many people a day. Like, they have that initial conversation. Maybe they'll put a note in to follow back up. I wouldn't necessarily consider that ghosting either. But it's more of like, hey, you took a moment to reply back to that recruiter, and then they didn't say anything. That is what I consider ghosting. And again, like, you are an asshole for that. I don't care who you are. You should not do that.
Well, before we go, I always like our guests to shout out anything they want. We should shout out your agency, your two shows again, and anything else you want to tell listeners about.
So I work for Spyglass Partners. We're a national boutique staffing agency that focuses on IT. We're getting into kind of logistics and kind of distribution, that kind of thing, supply chain, and also kind of executive search as well. Glad that they give me the freedom to be able to come on and do things like this. They give me the freedom to be able to do 2 podcasts a week, right? Architects of Innovation, where I, you know, kind of talk to leaders in their industry and talk about their journey and kind of how they got there, share some insights, mistakes they've made, lessons learned, those kinds of things. And then, of course, All Things Nerdy, where we literally just get on and we have a guest come on and talk about something they're passionate about for 30 minutes and just nerd out about it. So, definitely appreciative of Spyglass Partners. If you guys want to check out my 2 different podcasts, that will be awesome as well.
Amazing. Go follow Joseph on LinkedIn if you haven't already, but you probably do. If you're on TikTok, you can go follow him as well there. But thank you so much, Joseph, for being on. And thank you, everyone, for listening. I will see you for another episode next time. Enjoying Lead to Be? Please rate and review us wherever you get your podcast. Your reviews go a long way in supporting me. Thank you so much.